The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should consider obtaining independent advice before making any financial decisions.
Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perro columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers Podcast. Today we're catching up with Brett Smith, Managing Director of the Nickel and Copper Cobalt Focused Corazon Mining. It trades under the code CZN or Charlie Zulu November. It's an opportune time to be chatting with Brett as Elon Musk of Tesla electric vehicle fame has lit a fire under the nickel price by telling investors at a recent profit briefing that the biggest constraint in his plans for EV domination is a shortage of nickel. "Please bring me nickel," Musk said, telling the world's miners and explorers that Tesla will give them, and I quote, "a giant contract for a long period of time if you mine nickel efficiently and in an environmentally safe way." Now, if you're looking for a lightly capitalized nickel explorer to take part in that thematic, and one that already has its foot on a known nickel mining camp with unfolding exploration upside, Corazon could well be worth a look. Its market cap remains tiny at about $6 million, yet it is actively exploring at its Lynn Lake Nickel Copper Cobalt project in Manitoba in Canada, as well as exploring for large intrusive related copper gold cobalt gold deposits at its Mount Gilmore project near Grafton in northeastern New South Wales. Lynn Lake is a historical mining centre with various deposits mined until closure in 1976. Corazon consolidated the ground position in 2015 and has since updated a resource there to what is in itself quite a sizable prize. But it's chasing a bigger story there, which along with what's happening at Mount Gilmore, I'll get Brett to bring us up to speed on in a moment. But first I'm going to say g'day to Brett and welcome him to the podcast. Hi Brett, and thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Barry. Good to chat, mate.
Good. All right, so before jumping into the projects, Brett, it would be great if you could give us a rundown on your educational and professional background and how long you've been steering the ship at Corazon.
Okay. I guess working backwards, I've been with Corazon since 2010. And before it was called Corazon, it was, I don't know if anyone remembers, Grainded Metals. Mm-hmm. So I think they floated in about 2005. So the company's been around for about 15 years. I'm a geologist. I've been on the boards of junior exploration companies since the early 2000s. I still call myself a geologist. I like to keep the hands on the tools, so to speak, and do a lot of the targeting work in-house with the team we've got here as well. So it's my passion. I grew up in the mining industry. I grew up in Cape York Peninsula at Weipa. I went to uni at James Cook University in Townsville, educated in Brisbane at school there for a while, but yep, I call myself still a North Queenslander based in Perth. Sorry about that. It's a reminder. One of the things I can't turn off. So basically grew up in North Queensland, still call myself a Queenslander. That's me, I think, Barry.
Right. Okay. Weipa background, was the family involved in the bauxite industry up there? Or?
Yeah, I think we moved up in the late 60s. And so when we first went up there, we lived with friends, and where our house was across the street and it was all bush. So we've been there since then. I went to kindergarten and Weipa and all that kind of stuff. So up to about grade 10. So yeah, it's all bauxite mining. Dad went up there driving trucks and ended up working his way up through the company.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now again, before jumping into the projects, just a general question for you. What's your feel for the nickel market? And simply put, why is it a good time to be exploring for the metal, do you think?
Well, I guess I'm bullish because I separate the nickel metals into class one and class two. So if you look at nickel on the whole, a lot of the media, a lot of the press is about the nickel price and supply and demand, but if they bulked everything in together. So a lot of the market is aware of what's happening in Indonesia and the Chinese demand, the nickel pig iron, et cetera. If you look at the nickel sulfide component of it, it's a much smaller market than the whole nickel market. And, you know, if we're looking at batteries, Elon Musk, and all of that side of the industry, the growth industry, not to mention that stainless steel is still growing at a fairly good rate despite the current market, you see a future demand that is much more substantial than where it is now. And not only that, usually these nickel deposits are multi-metal. You know, we're looking for nickel, copper, and cobalt. And so that just adds to the value of the rocks, that's for sure.
Yeah, okay. Now, I mentioned Lynn Lake earlier. Tell us a bit about its history and what you're up to there.
Okay, it's an old mining centre. It was a bit like the Western mining, the Kambalda area for Australia, really. It was a one-company town, very secretive in what they were doing. Not a lot of papers have been written about Lynn Lake. I think there's only one published paper in its history. Discovered in the 40s, I guess mining started in the early 50s. A lot of the exploration that we're looking at still now in our regional work was done back in, you know, the late 40s, early 50s type stuff, and hasn't been added to. So we've got some very interesting areas to look at for that reason. So they started mining about 1954, mined for 24 years, 23 years, almost non-stop, and produced about 1 million tonnes per annum. So it's a big intrusive system. You know, the main mine area, the A plug's about 3 kilometres long. That's one intrusion, and they've got a little satellite intrusion off the one side called the high-grade L deposit. But it's a prolific producer, exploited down to about 1,100 metres below surface, and still we've got, I say, very conservative JORC resource of about 16.3 million tonnes in the resource area.
Right, which in itself is quite substantial vis-a-vis the company's market cap. Why is there a disconnect there, you think, at the moment?
Well, nickel hasn't been the flavour of the market for a long, long time. And we first got onto Lynn Lake in 2010 with some exploration ground there. Over up until 2016, I guess we consolidated the whole project area. And it's the first time, as you said, it's the first time it's been under the roof of one house since my closure in 1976. Corazon, we're an explorer, and I guess that's the main thing that our shareholders expect from us. When nickel's not relevant in the market, we do have other things that we look at. And Mount Gilmore for us is our second project, and it's quite a good project. But that's a copper, cobalt, gold, sulfide project. It's not nickel. So I think Lynn Lake has grown. We've grown it in times where the nickel price isn't that great. We don't always get tagged with the nickel explorer type tag. And I think also because it's not in our backyard. You know, most of the nickel exploration that's done in Australia, you know, we all know about it. It's in Western Australia, and it's very familiar to us. Well, we're in Canada. I think we might have 4 Canadian shareholders, and we're in a project that's. I don't think a lot of people know that the quality of the Lynn Lake project. Not a lot of geoscientists in Canada know the quality of the Lynn Lake project.
Yeah, it's a curious situation. Interesting too. We're talking about Canada there because the Canadians were the investment dollar, particularly the speculative mining investment dollar, was so focused, got shifted across to marijuana and cryptocurrencies. There was that lag period when the gold price took off, which allowed a lot of Australian companies to go in there and pick up projects. In a sense, you were ahead of the pack in nickel, so we were just waiting for the sun to shine on nickel, and hopefully it will be off to the races.
Yeah, we initially saw the exploration potential of the project. Now, while we do believe it's a good development opportunity and without a discovery at the right nickel price, we believe it's a great exploration play. And I think the proof in that is that every company that has drilled in the Lynn Lake region for nickel since the mine closure have all made discoveries. And so we're out there now spending money and looking at something new, and we've got high expectations for what we do every time we drill a hole in the lake because it's so prospective.
You have in the past released an updated resource estimate. I think it's 110,000 tonnes of nickel, 51,000 tonnes of copper and 5,000 tonnes of high-value cobalt. I was just wondering what you see as the critical mass needed at Lynn Lake to get serious about moving into production.
Yeah, I think it's more based on value, so it's price determined. when they first started the Lynn Lake mine, they needed 12 million tonnes of reserve. And I don't think it's much different now. No, our resources, we categorise those at the highest standard indicated. But they're drilled down to 12.5 meter centres, those resources. So they're ready for mining. We've put it back to indicated in our JORC category because we don't have things like modern geotech studies, et cetera, et cetera. So it just needs a couple of core holes just to get it up to that measured level. So we think tonnage-wise, we're fairly close to where we need to be. And if you look at the metal price, it's been a lot lower than we would like it to be. So I guess what we can influence is the costs and the costs of mining, processing. We've done some processing test work, and the modern processing tech work is just so much better than what was done historically. So there's cost benefit there. And if we can further improve on the metallurgical recoveries and upgrading of low-grade material, et cetera, and reduce the costs of mining by going from, how they traditionally mined it to something like a sub-level cave or something like that, we save an enormous amount of cost with those mining methods. So if we look at our cost side of it and the metal price recovers just slightly, then Lynn Lake would have to be very close to being a development opportunity.
Yeah, we've got nickel a shade under US $6 a pound at the moment. UBS forecasting it could go to at least $8 a pound by 2022 on the EV thematic. Is $8 to $10 a pound this thing would fly?
All we'd have to be concerned about is the capital hurdles restarting the mine. Mm-hmm. Definitely as far as an operating expenses, etc., operating costs for nickel operation, $8 to $10 a pound, it's a very good metal price.
Right, okay. Now, all historic mineral fields benefit from new exploration methods and techniques. Just wondering what you're employing along those lines at Lynn Lake.
Just about everything. One of the directors said the other day, Lynn Lake's had everything thrown at it. Why are you even considering doing more geophysics? the advances in geophysical processing, computer power, and everything like that in the last, I guess, 5 to 10 years have just been absolutely amazing, not to mention the 3D capacity of the software computers, et cetera. So we deal with data sets going back to the 60s. We hand-digitized our regional gravity at 200 meters, enormous survey done by Sherrod Gordon back in the 60s, and we hand-digitized those, punched that information in the computer, and it's as good as a modern-day survey. But you get other surveys like your magnetics, the magnetics improvements in the capture of the magnetics, the equipment, and then the processing has just been extraordinary. So that's constant. It was at the start of this year we stumbled on to a very good way of doing magnetic vector inversions, which a lot of the technical people would be aware of, and that was from Geosoft, a computing software company. And so that's commercially available now. So we threw that straight at Lynn Lake, the mining centre, to have a look at the known mines and known deposits, and we could see these deposits down to 600 metres below surface.
Wow.
So we then throw that to an exploration exploration prospects, and we compare that with how we previously done the magnetic inversions, and they're chalk and cheese. And so things like that we're looking at. We have a lot of issues with surface conductance from old VMSs and sediments caught up in the intrusions and all that kind of stuff, which are red herrings for any electromagnetic type survey. So because of all this pollution, you could call it, we're looking at more passive ways of doing EM and things like that. And we believe they'll work. We've got very good magnetics now. We're just probably lacking that 3D resistivity / conductance type survey. And we're looking at something at the moment now that it is very new. And it's only been used once in Australia. And it works. So we're hoping it'll now allow us to tell the difference between VMS type sulfides and magmatic nickel sulfides.
Right, okay. So earlier this year you started a drilling program, but things got a bit wet underfoot.
Yeah, it's a bit stop-start. We thought we had enough time. We were doing a small drill program in the mining centre, and we thought we'd be quiet and just sneak out and drill one or two holes into a favourite exploration
prospect, and lo and behold, we're down just on top of the geophysical anomaly, about 400 metres below surface, and the spring melt started over a couple of days. We went from -8 to +8, 8 degrees Celsius, and we got flooded off the hole. So that was back in early May, and we announced, I think, yesterday that mobilising everyone to site as we speak, and hopefully be back drilling before the end of this month.
Okay. No COVID problems in that part of the world?
Always. Manitoba has declared exploration as a critical industry, and so we're allowed to mobilise our drill crews and geologists to site. It helps if they're in the same province, of course. Mm. When you cross provincial borders, it gets harder. But they're all driving big trucks, and there's no cars or utilities and things like that, so it's quite obviously to all the officials that we're exploration. We have had trouble with geophysical crews, and because they quite often fly by plane or helicopter to get to and cross provincial borders, and not as widely recognised as being essential exploration kind of personnel. So that's an issue, and we don't want to be caught with the 2 weeks quarantine on either side, because that's a cost that we'd have to incur. So it's just a bit of a juggle, but we've been lucky with the drilling, and we started drilling in December last year, and our crews were very sick. We had a few people taken to hospital in December last year, and what we thought was just a normal influenza or virus, and in hindsight it could have been anything. This year we've had no illnesses, no sicknesses, and we've been very careful on how personnel are treated.
Yeah, that's great to hear. So in terms of the ever-impatient market looking for drill results, what's the expectation around that?
We've probably got all going well. We've probably got a week's worth of drilling to do on this hole. And that does depend that we've still got 500 metres of rods down the hole at the moment. The coal's secured, and it looks like it. Now, the rods were turning when we left them there. We just couldn't pull them out because the platform was floating around too much. So the thing is to get back in there, pull that equipment out, clean everything up, and get it back down. So that's after we get a platform that's quite stable. We'd have to be helicopter supported to some degree, at least getting the rig over the hole again. We'll plonk it down with the helicopter, but there's a couple of helicopters fairly close by that we can utilize.
Okay.
So I think after we get to drilling, maybe a week, we're just on the top of the geophysical anomaly. We're starting to see more sulfides. We don't know what this anomaly is. It's unusual. It's thick, it's flat lying. At least the GIF is the magnetic signatures, thick and flat lying, and it's a feature that's very anomalous in form and location. So
okay, definitely something to watch out for.
Yeah.
Okay, now the second link to the company story, Mount Gilmore. What's the story there?
Yeah, Mount Gilmore. I guess we're a strong believer in Lynn Lake, and whenever you look at another project, you match it up against the assets you already have and to see if there's any benefit. And 2016, we acquired Mount Gilmore. And the reason we first got introduced to Mount Gilmore was there was a very rare and unique high-grade cobalt sulfide deposit there. And it's quite small, but subsequent to getting hold of the project, we draw that, and we've got results like 5 meters at 2% cobalt. So it is in places quite rich, and cobalt for that whole area is quite elevated. The reason we did go with the project was because it was a substantial land holding, and there was very little exploration regionally, but there was quite extensive turn of the century, late 1800s, early 1900s working, small scale workings on copper veins and structures and things like that for the full 20 kilometres of the strike of the project. So we acquired the project. We focused on Cobalt Ridge, which was a cobalt sulfide prospect. At the same time, we went around and went about and geochemically sampled the full 20 kilometres of the project area. And what this work revealed to us, that there were very large copper, cobalt, silver, plus or minus gold geochemical anomalies, almost a full 20-kilometer strike of the project area. So, and some of these anomalies are 2.5K by 1.5K. So it's quite substantial centres of geochemical anomalism. So that's where we are. We haven't drilled any of these targets. We've done a bit of regional scale, wide space geophysics over them to have a look at them, and they seem to be reactive to that kind of exploration. And the next step for us would be to go in with some detail in the geophysics or similar, and determine where we could drill a hole. And that's the problem we have at the moment. These targets are that large, and we don't think reducing the sampling space for the surface geochemistry will give us any more detail. Really, these geochemical anomalies are that large, we just don't know where to put the drill holes. We've got, you know, we're positive we can go in there and drill these narrow structures and get, you know, 1 to 5 meters thick of high-grade copper, but that's not what we're after.
Yeah, okay. Given the scale potential there, are you the sort of thing you'll advance 100%, or will you look for a JV partner perhaps?
We've got the original vendor still retain 20% of the project, and we're fully funding that. We have spoken to a few groups in the past that expressed an interest in it, but I'm not sure any of them are quite aware of the most recent developments with respect to the geochemistry and things like that. So we are very open in all our exploration on both projects, and happy to talk to anyone, you know, technically or interested in the projects, that's for sure. Being a junior, you look at every opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
But with the spending requirement on this project in New South Wales is not large. We can maintain it. We're definitely advancing it in the background. We've got a government co-drilling grant from the New South Wales government that allows us to drill a couple of holes, and they'll run 50% of the drilling costs. So that's quite good. We're engaging, we're engaging some of Australia's, I guess, federal agencies and universities on, modern geochemical studies that are proving quite interesting around the world. Some of the big companies are doing studies and getting universities to do this work for them. And we've tentatively looked at funding a research project and using some of the methods that may allow us to vector into the heat source of this mineralization. Now, if we're looking at, say, now the main body of, I guess, anomalies covers about 12 kilometers. So if we can take a series of surface sample rock samples on that and do some really good science on it, it's not expensive work, that may help us vector into where we should be focusing at looking at drilling. So things like that are happening in the background. So we're keen to put a hole into it. We just don't want to waste that hole.
Yeah, okay. All right, folks, there we go. We've got a committed explorer there. Reviving the Lynn Lake nickel project over in Canada, and advancing what could be a very interesting project at Mount Gilmore. So with that, Brett, I'm going to say thanks for your time today, mate, and best of luck with it all.
No, thank you, Barry. We'll just keep going on. So
that's all right. Cheers.